today's episode of Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a pre-recorded interview with Louis Gerard, the director of The Wake, a film starring young deaf actor Xander Colbeck-Bola. But first, disability news for the week of April 17th, 2023. According to a recent study by the University of California, Riverside and the University of California, Los Angeles, parents of about 1 in 6 children with autism have received a request from a child care or preschool setting to remove their child. In the study, parents interviewed reported that 16% of the children had been expelled before reaching elementary school, most for behavior concerns. According to Jan Blocker, a professor who led the study, which was published in the journal Exceptional Children, quote, "These little kids were asked to leave school because they demonstrated behaviors directly related to their autism, so they were being expelled from preschool for the very problems that they needed school for," end quote. On average, children kicked out of their programs averaged a little over 3 years old. The study also found that expulsions were more common in private programs than public programs. Researchers did note that many children who were turned away had not yet been identified as having a disability. Blacker said, quote, "That suggests to us that it never occurred to the teachers to refer them for assessment. So part of it is a lack of teacher awareness of the prevalence of autism and how it manifests in a very young age. Had they understood autism, they might have been inspired to deal with it and say, maybe I should have this child assessed," end quote. By the time the children reached kindergarten age, the study found that those who were asked to leave school during their preschool years experienced more conflict with their teachers and were more dependent on them, among other challenges. In another study by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, a report was issued in an effort to expand tracking of children with autism to include teens, making it the first effort of its kind. The CDC has examined autism among 8-year-olds across the country for years. More recently, they started collecting data on 4-year-olds as well. Now, in a study published in the Journal of Adolescent Health, the agency provided a look at individuals with autism who were age 16 in 2018. In the new report, more than half of teens with autism also had a diagnosis of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder or anxiety, and almost 17% had indications of suicidal behavior or ideation. In almost 15% of the cases, a diagnosis of autism had initially been ruled out before receiving the diagnosis later on, and more than 1 in 10 children with autism were not identified until after age 8. Kids not identified were more likely to be Hispanic, verbal, born at low birth weight, have high IQ or adaptive scores, and have other neuropsychological conditions. Researchers found that plans were in place for almost all of the teens to help them transition to adulthood, but noted that more could be done, stating that 30% of the plans did not contain goals related to post-secondary living, daily living skills, or community participation. According to Michelle Hughes, epidemiologist at the CDC, who led the study on teens, other findings on the 16-year-olds in the latest study with details on special education services and transition planning will be issued in the future. A report is also expected on those who are age 16 in 2020, and she indicated that the CDC is piloting an effort to collect information about those with autism in young adulthood in order to assess how they are influenced by what happens in high school. And finally, a type of residence residency program for aspiring special education teachers is beginning this summer in an attempt to address the shortage of teachers, specifically in Walla Walla, Washington, and more generally, the shortage that exists across the country. The one-year program, which is offered through the Washington State Regional Education Associations and the public schools, is designed to train future special ed teachers by having them work in several different educational settings in the district. Special Education Director Barb Casey said, quote, "It really is a problem statewide and nationwide. I believe special education is the best job in the world, and this residency helps get that message out. They get to have that experience that really shows them why it's the best job in the world," end quote. Each prospective teacher would commit to employment in the Walla Walla Public Schools for 3 years after successful completion of the program. Mindy Meyer, the district's Director of Human Resources, said the program was planning to accept only 4 residents. She said the residents would receive a more well-rounded experience than most special ed teachers. She said, quote, "A really great aspect of this is that you have special ed teachers in resource rooms, behavior rooms, and specialty classrooms, as well as general education. Oftentimes, a special ed teacher might only get one of those experiences or only resource rooms. So this way, they'll have 4 different experiences," end quote. The residency will be for pay with a minimum salary of $35,000 including benefits. The Washington Education Association will cover the cost of assessments, certifications, and course materials, and tuition will cost the residents $2,000. To participate, applicants must be at least 18, have a bachelor's degree, completed an approved basic skills assessment, and an application including 2 letters of recommendation and a personal narrative. Casey said, quote, "I am so excited about this opportunity for people to help us do what's right for kids, which is to have the most qualified people in those positions," end quote. And that's the news for this week.
Did you say I've got a lot to learn? Well, don't think I'm trying not to learn, since this is the perfect spot to learn.
And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nyswander. This is Disability Beat, and I'm joined today by Louise Girard, who is the award-winning director of a short film called Wake that features a child who is deaf. So welcome to the program, Louise.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Sure. Why don't we start out by having you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure. I am Luis Girard. I am from Puerto Rico, a filmmaker that lives in New York City at the moment. I've been working in film and advertising for almost 20 years now.
So you must be finding a little bit of success there. So how did you get involved in the film Wake? What's the history behind that?
Okay. Well, it's a bit long, but I'll try to keep it short. I wrote The Wake in 2017. So it's funny, looking back, now there are movies like Coda and Sound of Metal that have been very successful with a deaf characters, right? But yeah, I wrote The Wake back in 2017, and shot it in 2019. And the reason I wrote it back in 2017, just as I wrote a few different screenplays, I wasn't sure I was going to produce the film, just like what normally happens with many screenplays. You never know if they'll ever get produced or not. And back in 2019, an opportunity came. I met a friend, eventually became a friend, Chris Maiden in Canada. And we were talking about producing this type of content. And he asked me if I had something that could be produced in Canada. And I told him about The Wake, and he asked me to read it, and I sent it to him, and he got excited immediately and said he wanted to be a part of it, and he would help me produce it, which he did, and that's how it came about. So it took a while. From the time it was written to the time it was produced, and now being released, because COVID just made the process a bit difficult, like, to finish the film, so the post-production took forever.
Yeah, COVID made life difficult for a lot of art people in the world of art and production, music, and all those things. So thank goodness you finally got back to it. Can you summarize a little bit of the story behind this? I think this is fiction, correct?
It is fiction. But like many fiction stories, there's also a little bit of myself in it, but the story is 100% fiction. It's the main theme is brotherhood. It's the story of these two brothers that live in a small town in the U.S. And their family runs the local funeral home. And Walter, who is the oldest of the two, he's 15, about 15 years old. Basically robs the homes of the people that pass away. And in his mind, he's not like a real criminal. He's just, I guess you could say there's a bit of, maybe he's a bit of a sociopath perhaps, but he doesn't think he's doing anything wrong because the people have passed and they don't need these things anymore. And he also thinks of his father as someone who profits from the dead. So basically what he does is that when someone passes away in the town and the wake is taking place at their parents' funeral home, he takes his brother to the person's home and they break into the house and they steal items. It's more of an adventure for them. Mm-hmm. And then obviously that leads to, I don't want to spoil it away, but a negative ending, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And so the younger brother, is that the young man who's deaf?
Correct. He his name is Sander, Colbeck Bola. And he was 10 years old when we shot the film. He had no acting experience. Actually, none of the brothers had any acting experience, and I'm quite proud of that because they did a great job, both of them. Sander, because he had never been in camera, and he was extremely shy. Isaac, who plays the older brother, he was not like an actor, and he had to learn sign language. It was a long process to find them. It was a process because I had the option of going with a kid who was not deaf and have him pretend like he was.
Mm-hmm.
But I chose the tough path of like finding someone who was really deaf. I wanted that authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me months. I spent about 4 months in Canada trying to find this boy. So I did multiple casting sessions because it was not just about finding this boy, Sander, but it was also they had to look like brothers. It was a bit of a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
It was a long journey, but eventually I got there.
Yeah. So this film has not been released yet, but there has been a little bit of history already. It has won an award. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. It just won a jury award at the Thomas Edison Film Festival, which it started in late February. But it's a film festival that runs for about a year. And they basically screen the movies in different cities around the U.S. Until next January. So my film, even though it already won an award because they announced the winners before the first group of films were screened, my film hasn't been screened yet. So now on Thursday, April 7th, it will be its first screening. It will be like the opening night, which will be at the Cleveland International Film Festival, which is an Oscar qualifying film festival.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it'll be interesting. I'll be traveling there tomorrow and yeah, get my hands in the process of like Q&A after the film and all that. I wish I could bring the cast with me.
Yeah, I'm sure you do, but that would be a little bit more of an expense than probably a filmmaker can do on his own. So are all the films in this film festival do they all come from the Thomas Edison?
No. There are different film festivals, and mm-hmm. basically, so The Wake was just released now, and they're independent film festivals. So right now, the film The Wake is just starting its festival run.
Okay.
So it'll be screening in different film festivals for a year, perhaps a year and a half, both in Europe, the U.S., Asia, Middle East. So it's,
it's going to be traveling all around. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to be traveling all around, yeah.
And
for a year.
What happens to it after that? Are people going to be able to, like, see this somewhere online or, do they have to?
No, there'll be a distribution, and it'll eventually get it'll get some distribution. I've been offered distribution, but I'm just holding on that for a little bit because the problem is if the movie's released, then it gets immediately disqualified from film festivals. It's one of those tricky things. So I have to do if the movie's online, then a film festival, especially the good ones, would not accept it.
Mm.
So I'm basically going to do the festival run. And once it's being screened in good film festivals, then it'll be released and hopefully available for the world to see.
Yeah, that would be great. So are there any festivals scheduled for any place in Illinois or in the Midwest?
So it's the Chicago International Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
But that one they haven't, it's not confirmed yet. And I can't remember, I think that one is in October. I have to double check, mm-hmm. but it's definitely that's in the lineup.
Yeah, so that's only a couple of hours away for most people most people in central Illinois anyway. So I suppose ultimately they can just look at their website to see if The Wake is a part of that before they, make the trek up there. Is this the only film in the festival that you are aware of that includes a person with a disability, or are there others?
I believe so. I believe this might be the only one.
Mm-hmm.
I looked over the short films that were selected, and I didn't see any other. So, yeah, hopefully that's a good thing.
Yeah,
or not a good thing. I mean, it's but it just makes it different. But these film festivals are not. Like, this particular film festival is not the type that is focused on a particular, subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, if a film gets accepted because they like it, then, there are other film festivals that are focused on, fantasy or, horror, films that are more, focused on documentary. But this one in particular, it's not.
I'm assuming that since your actor, the 10-year-old who is deaf, his parents were involved in this, supporting him to do this as well. What information or assistance did you get from them in helping to guide your young actor and get the, you know, make him a participant in the film?
It's a good question. And I have to say, I was quite fascinated by his family, because his family was, they're all deaf and mute. And it's a large family. Well, that's incorrect. The father, he actually is deaf from one ear, but he speaks. And yeah, he's just deaf from one ear, but can hear from the other.
Mm-hmm.
His mom, Sarah, she's also deaf and mute. He has three brothers and two sisters, and they're all deaf and mute. It was obviously communicating was very interesting, and this was one of the things I wanted. As I said earlier, I wanted to be authentic, and I wanted someone that was real, had the disability. But I did not foresee what that entailed, and obviously one of the things I had to have interpreters on set,
mm-hmm.
and so I had to, and then I not only one, I had three, because then they would get like tired after a while. So every couple of minutes, they would keep switching. So whenever I want to tell Sandra something, I would tell her, she would tell him, then she would come back at me, you know. And then a couple of minutes, they would swap. So that's kind of like the way we did it. And if I wanted to go and meet with him, and that was probably one of the most enlightening experiences for me when after I casted him, I just wanted to be sure that he understood what the project entailed, because it was physically demanding. We were shooting in the cold in winter, and we were shooting for multiple days. And so I went to his house and met with his family, and I just wanted to be 100% sure that he wanted to be involved in the film, because he had never acted. And when I was there, I saw the way they communicated, and these are things that I did not have in the script. And after being in the house, I adapted I included them in the script. Like if the sister was in the kitchen and wanted to call the mom, she would turn the lights on and off. She would switch the lights on and off,
mm-hmm.
and that's when how the mom would look and react and know that she was calling. Or like they would stomp on the floor, and that's what. Like one would stomp on the floor and get the brother's attention, and I saw those things, and yeah, they were quite enlightening, because I included them in the film, and so it was for me a big learning experience as well, and I got to understand them, and I'm very happy that I decided to go the way I went and got the opportunity to show. Like this type of disability that normally you don't see in film. Again, funny enough, now you see Coda and Sound of Metal, but back when I wrote it, those films were not. I remember Children of the Lesser God. Mm-hmm. I remember that movie from the 80s, which you mentioned, the actors. That was like one of the times or films that I remember seeing a character with this type of disability.
Yeah.
So I thought that would be. I'm happy that I was able to finish the film and made the decisions I made, even though they were challenging at times.
I credit you for making that decision, because I can imagine it would be a struggle for some people thinking, well, I don't use sign language, so how am I going to communicate with people that way? But you made it work.
I made it work. I must say, sometimes being naive at something is great, because you go all in without knowing the possible hurdles, mm-hmm. and sometimes that's a good thing, you know. And I went into it with the right energy, and I was not thinking of like problems. And then, of course, I ran into, I wouldn't say problems, just hurdles. But we got through them. And looking back, his mom is so happy and so proud, and she was always like writing and she asking, when's the film ready? I want Sandra to see.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very happy. There was a review that came out on Friday about the film, It was like a, I can't remember the paper. It was a really good, it was a 5-star review, and,
wow,
and had very nice things to say about his performance.
Uh-huh.
The film critic like loved his performance and said he was like a talent to like watch, because he could, if he wanted, there was a career, a film, an acting, or a path in film for him.
Yeah,
and I was quite happy to see that. I was quite proud. I sent the article to his family, so I'm sure that they must be quite excited.
Yeah, well, you'll have to send it to me too. I'd love to read it. And
yeah,
so we're running out of time here, but I did want to ask you a little bit about the wake and its portrayal of a child who was deaf. You know, how did that portrayal? How did that get reviewed by, first of all, the family, but other people in the deaf community who have viewed it?
Well, to be honest, because the film is just being released, so only very few people have seen it, and people from the deaf community who have seen it, obviously Sander's family, and there's one boy who I forgot to mention earlier. His name is Brendan. Brendan, last name is tricky to pronounce. Nugget. And he's an actor, and he's deaf and mute. And I had him with me when I was shooting the film. He was not an interpreter. He was just sitting next to me on set, because I just wanted to make sure that if someone who was deaf and watched the film, I wanted to make sure that the signing was correct. And so he was basically telling me, because the rest of the cast had learned sign language. So Brendan was there just to let me know, you know, that they were incorrect. He basically was the one who taught them the sign language, and then he was next to me letting me know if a take was good or a take was bad.
Mm-hmm.
So he was the first person I sent the film to when I had a rough cut.
Yeah.
And he said it's the signing is perfect. For him, it's like these are real people that have been speaking ASL or sign language for their entire life.
Yeah,
so that was another thing that gave me a great peace of mind.
Absolutely, I'm sure it did. So do you have a website for the film? Is there anywhere people can go to find out more about it? I know you don't have it online yet, but is there a trailer that they can view? And if so, where might they find that?
Yes, there is. Well, I have a trailer. There's a trailer on Vimeo, but there's a trailer on my website. My website is www.luisgerard.com, and you'll see it there immediately. And also, if you go to the Cleveland International Film Festival, if you go through the short films on competition, you'll find The Wake. You just need to put the title, The Wake, under their search platform, and you'll see it. There's a trailer there as well.
Okay, well, I'm afraid
so
you're...
either on my website or that.
I'm afraid we are out of time. So thank you so much for joining me today, and we'll look forward to seeing The Wake soon. Thank you, Luis Gerard, who is the director of The Wake. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great rest of your week.
No, I'll stand my ground. Dragging me down, gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Thanks for tuning in to Disability Beat, and stay tuned for Food Sleuth Radio coming up next. Just a reminder, our spring pledge drive, though it has been officially closed for a few days, is still up on the website. So if you are wanting a WEFT ball cap or tote bag, you have a day or two left to make that happen. Make your donation of $90.10 at weft.org. Just click the donate now button and a hat or a ball cap will